Hello and welcome to Cruise Club. We've got the need to podcast. This is episode 32, Night and Day from 2010. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And Mike, with us tonight to talk about, I don't know, Mission Impossible Light, I guess we could call Uber Light.
Three and a half?
I guess so. I don't know. We have with us not one, but two guests. The guest you just heard laughing, you know him from past episodes. You know him from his newsletter, Numlock News. We have Walter Hickey. Hello, Walter.
Hello. Thank you for having me back on. This is always a really fun time.
Yes, of course. Thank you so much for joining us. And also with us tonight, someone who has spent most of her life living with the last name Knight, no longer. But who's better suited to talk about a movie called Night and Day than the former Jessica Knight, Jessica Collins? Hello, Jess.
Hey there.
Thank you for being back, and thank you for bringing your last name expertise to this movie. Are you related to the Tom Cruise character in this movie?
You know, I think we're a distant relation on my father's side, twice removed.
Ooh, very, very exciting. Before we go further, though, let me give a quick plot summary in case people have not seen this movie, because this movie is not streaming for free anywhere. It feels like the kind of movie that you would find somewhere. It seems not out there. So here's a quick plot summary about Night and Day before we talk about whether we liked it, didn't like it, favorite parts, all that sort of stuff. So Tom Cruise plays a guy named Roy Miller, a mild-mannered spy, I guess. He's like sort of slow burn Ethan Hunt. We don't really realize that he's Ethan Hunt until a little bit into the movie. He boards a flight with Cameron Diaz to Boston, kills a bunch of people on a plane. He then sort of teams up with her, says that people are going to come after her, warn her about him. Special agents bring her in for questioning, tell her basically that Ethan went rogue, because Ethan always goes rogue. They're all searching for this little super power battery thing called the Zephyr, and that's hidden in a little knight figure, which is very fitting because we eventually find out that Cruise's last name is actually Knight. We learn that Cruise went rogue because he thought his partner would, so he wanted to save this little battery from falling into the wrong hands. We travel the globe. We meet Paul Dano, who's the scientist who created the battery. Gal Gadot shows up. This movie gets really exciting for a little bit because Gal Gadot is here. Stellan Skarsgård, who's been tracking Cruise, he goes rogue. Meanwhile, Cameron Diaz, who has spent the entire movie having to get rescued by Tom Cruise, finally takes some initiative, finally gets some agency in the story, goes to Cruise's house, learns that he quote-unquote died in Kuwait in a helicopter crash. She gets taken by the bad guys. Cruise rescues her again. They run with the bulls, which is amazing. Stellar Skateboard gets the battery, explodes, which is kind of cool. Cruise gets shot, but he survives. He gets brought in. The CIA is going to basically kill him. Cameron Diaz rescues him, and then they live ostensibly happily ever after. I do have a question for everybody up front. There are two versions of this. I don't know if you know that there's two versions. There's a theatrical and an extended. I know that Mike watched the theatrical. I watched the extended. Jess and Walter, which version did you watch? Did you watch the, like, 2-hour extended or, like, the hour 45-ish theatrical?
I was theatrical.
I've seen both.
From what I gather, the theatrical is probably a little bit better. The movie censorship website says that the extended version offers a little bit more backstory into Cameron Diaz's character. You see more about her, like, why she wants to restore the car, all that sort of stuff. You know, the gift to her sister, Maggie Grace from Taken, from Lost, who's getting married. We got another Lost connection coming up in the next movie, Mike, too. We got Lost connections. So there's a little bit more there, and there's a little bit more action. But it seems like, for the most part, the extra 8 or 9 minutes that it adds aren't vital. So if you saw the theatrical, I think that's totally fine. I think what we've learned, Mike, through both Tom Tom podcasts, is it seems like the theatrical is usually better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so far. Yep.
All movies should be shorter.
All movies should be shorter.
Every movie deserves to be slightly shorter than it currently is. This is just a universal fact of movies.
All right, so Jess, let's start with you. I have a question for you. Do you remember why you signed up for this one? Is this a movie that you particularly like or love, or is it just a random one you picked? And then if you had to pick a favorite part, what is your favorite part of Night and Day?
I love this movie.
Okay.
I have zero shame that I love this movie. I signed up because I love this movie, not just because my, you know, former last name is part of the title.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite scene in this movie is the diner scene.
Oh, okay.
Oh my God. It's so good.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say if I had to pick a scene, that's my favorite scene.
When they meet up with her ex-boyfriend?
Stay in the booth.
Yeah, just stay in the booth.
On a broader scale, what do you love about this movie? Do you love a lot of Tom Cruise movies? Do you love this more than most? Where does this rank among your favorite Tom Cruise movies?
I think we all know that Legend is by far and always will be my favorite movie of all time.
Mm-hmm.
There's never gonna be another one. This is pretty up there. I watched this movie Friday. My cousin and I watched it. My cousin is also a huge Tom Cruise fan.
Shout out, Mike.
Yes. Shout out to my cousin, Mike.
Mike Knight?
No, unfortunately, he doesn't have a cool last name like I do. Sorry about that, Mike. It's just so much fun. And it feels like it's basically Ethan Hunt trying to find a date in between his Mission Impossible movies. The plot is stupid. Like, if you're trying to follow along with the plot, there's so many holes, but it's just fun. I just really like it because I feel like it's carefree Tom Cruise, and he's just, like, having a great time, and it's, like, a fun weekend, and then it's back to work on Monday.
That is kind of fits in perfectly with, I guess, Tom Cruise's reason for taking this. He wanted to do another spy thriller, but was supposed to do either, like, Salt or The Tourist, which I think The Tourist is maybe, is that the Johnny Depp movie?
Yeah, and Salt was Angelina.
Yeah, and so apparently he was like, he had signed on to do The Tourist, and then his new boy, Christopher McQuarrie, was doing like extensive rewrites, and he dropped out to do this. But he chose to do this one because he wanted to have, just to your point, he wanted to do like sort of like a lighter, more rompier sort of action comedy kind of. It seems like what you love about this is almost explicitly the reason why he did this movie, is because he wanted to do the kind of movie he normally does, but have a little bit more fun with it.
That's exactly what it is, I think.
And Walter, what about you? Why did you sign up to do this movie? You haven't been on in a while. Is this one of your personal favorites? Is this one you had never seen before? What are your thoughts about it? And do you have a favorite part or a favorite moment?
The answer is no to every single one of those things. I think I basically, like, you guys sent over the Rolodex of movies that were available. And part of my response was just like, number one, I genuinely enjoy watching new movies that I'd never seen before or had no relationship to. And this one, I had never seen before. Again, I enjoy Tom Cruise. I enjoy the various different evolutions of him as a guy. And this movie kind of, and again, like, I'm sure that we're going to get into the reception of it well later on in this episode, but like, I think for a couple different reasons, I didn't get a chance to see this picture. And so as a result, I was super down to watch it. And it's a very fascinating movie if you like if you try to take it apart and understand what's going on and all that kind of stuff. And so honestly, I did not know what to expect signing up for it. I'm happy I did, because this is going to be a great episode.
Mike, what about you? I know that your rating of this kind of wildly surprised me on Letterboxd, but I guess you wound up really liking this.
Again, I surprised myself, I think. I had never seen this movie before. I think it came out around the time when it came out. I sort of think I wrote it off as another like Mr. and Mrs. Smith kind of thing, which I didn't like back then, but recently rewatched it. I really loved that movie too. But I love this movie. It's super unpredictable. Like, it's almost sort of satire-ish. It's like kind of meta. Like, it's almost like, Joey, you know how we used to talk about how like we wanted to write the ultimate Nick Cage movie, and it had to, and we had like all these checks and boxes that we were like writing on. Like, this feels like someone sat down and wrote like the Tom Cruise movie. Like, he's running on a roof in sunglasses for like half the movie. Like, it is everything. I mean, I just had so much fun like from beginning to end. And I don't know, I also loved how it's sort of like all through Cameron Diaz's point of view and everything. I mean, there's so much to go into. Yeah, I just had a great time watching it.
I wish that I did. I don't think this is a bad movie. I remember watching this at my parents' house. I think this was a movie. I'm a terrible gift giver to my parents because they basically, what do you buy for parents who basically have everything? You know, like, not, and that's not like a, it's not like a brag, like that they're well off or anything. It's just like, I've never known what to get them because I either didn't have money for a long time or like they just, you know, whatever they need, they get. And so I think I got this for one of them for some holiday because I was like, oh, my mom kind of likes Cameron Diaz. My dad likes Tom Cruise. This seems like a movie they could both like. And I remember watching it and being like, oh. And so I watched it again today. And I think for most of the movie, it's fine. I don't dislike it. I think it's fun. I think it's enjoyable. I think the Pamplona running with the bull scene is an all-time great. I think that's incredible at the end. But I think for the most part, it's just a mind-numbing kind of 2 hours. And I'm a little, I don't want to get too feminist or whatever here, but I feel like the Cameron Diaz character has given like absolutely no agency throughout most of this movie. Only when she's finally able to do things on her own do I feel like, oh, like this is enjoyable now. I just feel like she's running around like, I get that it's kind of like if one of us was tagging along with Ethan Hunt on one of his missions and like we were just getting in his way. Like, I get the humor there, but it just feels like she is so bumbly and I just didn't connect with it. And I wish that I did, but I don't know. But yeah, my favorite part though, for sure, is that bike chase through the bulls in Pamplona, because man, oh man, that is a lot of fun. But otherwise, you know, I think I'm going to mostly forget this again in a couple days.
I was surprised by the great action. Like, I think all the action pieces are great. Like the train stuff, like the plane sequence, like every 10 minutes or 20 minutes or something, there's like a crazy action sequence that's great. I'm surprised Gal Gadot's not your favorite part of the movie, Joey.
But I mean, I do love
heavy
her.
I was getting heavy Fast and Furious vibes already with the Cameron Diaz character, how she's like such a, you know, gearhead and everything like that. From the moment Tom Cruise is on screen, like, I couldn't stop laughing. Like, I don't know why or what it is, but it just feels like almost like Last Action Hero. Like, Cameron Diaz like fell into a movie one day and like couldn't get out. It just hit me like on more of like a comedic level, I guess. I wasn't expecting
that. Well, that's what it's supposed
to be. Yeah, and it attached to me, and it ran throughout the entire movie.
I figured out when I got the joke, which is that, like, what this originally must have been, I'll get to this later, but like, I think that this movie is actually worse because Tom Cruise is in it. Bold take. But I think that what this was pitched as is just like, hey, you know what we've never done? What if we looked at the Bond girl and literally just saw her journey? Like, what's it like? She passes out. She wakes up in a new place. Okay. The guy's doing, like, it's basically like, what if you accidentally threw in a woman who has to go to her sister's wedding and then made her the Bond girl? And then what's the experience like for her? It's got all the beats and syncopation and excellent set pieces of a Bond movie. And part of that might just because I've been watching Bond movies lately. But like, this seems like it was written probably when the first writer was on it. It was probably a pastiche of Bond and the use of Bond girls. And then when writers 2 through 14 took a stab at it, it changed up slightly.
I think that's the weird thing, is that by the end of the movie, I was like, oh, this is a Cameron Diaz movie. But like, it's sold and it's told like it's a Tom Cruise movie. And I think that there's a confusing protagonist issue. It should be interesting because what you just described sounds like a great movie. This is kind of close to that, but it also feels like other movies that try this, like, you know, the Isn't It Romantic movie with Rebel Wilson from last year, where she's like, I'm in a rom-com. I know I'm in a rom-com. That didn't work. Or there's that new Ryan Reynolds movie where it's like, I'm in a video game. Like, hopefully that works better. But I feel like there's these movies that like tries to skew what it is, and it kind of connects, but doesn't quite. And the movie that you described, Walter, is the movie that I want to see. Like, I want to see that, and I don't know that we fully get that here. I'm not sure.
Yeah, again, like, there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen on the writing side, it looked like, and then when Cruise signs on, obviously the entire movie gets overhauled. But like, I think that there's just a lot going on in this, and I liked a lot of it, but like, I think that the nut of it, you're right, that there is kind of a protagonist issue going on. But I, again, would love to hear more about what the folks who really genuinely enjoy this movie like from it, because there is a ton to like.
Yeah, I got way more of like a screwball 40s sort of thing going on, like a Cary Grant-ish kind of charade almost quality, or like, you know, the funny Hitchcock stuff or things like almost like it's a action rom-com to a degree or something like that, you know, where it's like, oh, like older sensibilities meet the modern way of filmmaking kind of thing. And so like, I sort of sank into that in a lot of ways. And sort of maybe that's why I was able to sort of rationalize maybe more of Cameron Diaz's behavior. Cause I was like, well, the movie knows it's a movie for sure. And it's trying to be several types of movies. And like, one of them is sort of like, you know, like Breakfast at Tiffany's or something, you know, like something of that nature. Like it really feels like they're squeaking everything into here. It doesn't work 100%. Like I definitely have issues with like the villains and things, and it's like motivations of a lot of people and things like that. I'm writing it off because like the action is so amazing and like it just came off so well.
I wonder if we just know too much about Tom Cruise's character. Like I think that what you're saying, Mike, about the villain's issue is, I think it sort of pertains to Cruise a little bit too, in that like if he was just a series of tropes.
Oh yeah, I could have used without his parents kind of thing, you know, like suddenly they're like the McMillionaires and he's like sort of tucked them away and made, like that was very weird. Like I would have rather have gotten more the one arms dealer trying, like, why does he want the Zephyr? I mean, I know everyone wants it because it's powerful, but like there's a line where he's like, oh yeah, that guy wants it too. And like, that's all we really get. So like, yeah, it needs to flesh out things more to be a better movie. But
I do feel like with the parents, I'm glad you brought up McMillionaires, because like with McMillions on HBO right now, I'm just like, oh, like when they won Publishers Clearing House twice, I'm like, oh, this is like the same thing as the McDonald's scam. It's just the same. There's just people pulling the strings, but except in this case, it's Tom Cruise instead of Uncle Jerry. It's different. Jess, like what about this? I mean, I know that you sort of described, but like, can you defend, I don't want to call these faults or flaws, but like, I want to hear more about why you love it. I want to dig into like what you connect with in this. Is it just the carefree atmosphere? Do you love the Cameron Diaz element? Like, what about this do you really love?
So here's the thing. I feel like when I'm always guessing, I'm always the person that's just like, I like to watch the movie to watch the movie. I can give a crap that the plot like really makes zero sense or the fact that Cameron Diaz is just like totally starstruck by Tom Cruise. Because let's be honest, if it was me and I was Cameron Diaz, I'd be starstruck by Tom Cruise too.
Well, I think that's like a big question in the movie, right? It's like, should you trust a stranger, or should you trust a stranger when he looks and acts like Tom Cruise?
I mean, if he looks and acts like Tom Cruise, and he's like, hey, I'm the guy, and you're like, okay, I'm gonna follow this guy around, because either he's gonna give me the action-packed weekend of my life for the shitty wedding that I'm going to that I really don't even want to be in for my shithead sister. She's my sister, I love her, whatever. But hey, there's this cool dude, let's go hang out with him. Like, hell yeah, I'm going to follow him around. Maybe I'm going to die, I'm going to take a bullet. It doesn't matter. I'm going to go out and I'm going to be happy. It was going to be great.
All right.
It's not 2 hours wasted, because it's 2 hours where, like, you don't have to try very hard, which is one of the reasons why I love reading stupid books sometimes. It's just, you don't have to put too much effort into it. You just watch the movie, like, you're just along for the ride.
I get that.
Yeah, every once in a while, you got to pick up the Da Vinci Code.
I feel like this movie kind of suffers for me in a way that, like, I'm watching it for Tom Cruise, and I don't love Tom Cruise. Like, it's just the specific lens that we're watching it for this podcast. Like, it's a weird thing to do. Like, if I was just watching this as a movie, I think it might be a little bit different. I also think that it was closer to what Walter was saying before. I think I would like it a little bit more, too. But it's just, I don't know that this is a great Tom Cruise movie, because due to real life scheduling, we're recording the Ghost Protocol movie or episode tomorrow night, and so I also watched that today, and I was like, holy shit, like, going from this to that, like, oh my, like, it's pardon the pun, it's night and day. Like, it is.
Damn it, no guys, it's been great, thank you for having me, I'm always delighted to come on. I'm out. I'm done. I'm pounding out. That's too much.
I am saluting, tipping the cap. But no, but like, it's just like
Steve Harvey.
It's the send up of the thing, and then we get the thing, and it's the best thing. It's so good. And yeah. I get that this isn't trying to be Mission Impossible, but man.
Yeah, I think the issue is we got it back to back.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise as a human being is always like where he's at his point in his career, what roles he's taking, all that kind of stuff is always kind of in the ambient background of what we talk about with Tom Cruise movies. And so this comes obviously at an interesting time where he's finally got a footing with his Mission Impossible franchise. It's kind of trucking faster than ever, but then very little else that he's trying to kind of combobulate on the side. Did Jack Reacher bomb yet, or is that before?
No, that's coming a couple years later. Did you, just real quick side note, did you do for 538, did you do the four or five types of Tom Cruise movies, or is he not one you did?
No, I totally did that. I have very few memories about precisely how it broke down. It's mostly early career versus late career kind of stuff. Where
we're firmly in the middle of what is undeniably the weirdest stretch in his career. So he does Mission Impossible 3 and comes off the highs of that, right? Then he goes to Lions for Lambs, where he basically plays Marco Rubio. It's like, oh, okay. Then he plays Tropic Thunder, where he's just an aging, balding, angry studio exec as a cameo, fun, weird, whatever. Then he does Valkyrie, where he plays a Nazi. Then he's in this, and then he's in another Mission Impossible movie. And then he's in Rock of Ages.
Yeah, this is a weird gauntlet of Cruise, isn't it? I think that a lot of what you're seeing now with Cruise, at least now in the period that we're talking, is like he has a good franchise, but Tom Cruise is 57 years old and cannot be Ethan Hunt forever. And as a result, like, you can see that with the Jack Reacher stuff. You can see that, I think, to a lesser extent with this one. You can see him attempting to, like, well, what's the next franchise that we're going to lay the groundwork down for? Amicable spy, but more romantic comedy component to it is a viable angle that you could potentially run with for a while. He's, I think, trying stuff out experimentally, which is always interesting. But, like, yeah, the thing with Night and Day is that, like, if you imagine this movie, but instead of Tom Cruise being a two-hander and he's like the co-lead and even honestly first build, and if you instead imagine like a Henry Cavill in this role and he's firmly supporting, and then Cameron Diaz is kind of given a much more elevated position and gets more more centrality to it, right? I think that it's a better movie in some interesting ways, but I get totally why he did it.
To all your points there, Mike, what we're seeing here is that Cruise is kind of, I mean, in a much bigger, higher A-list level, but he's in the same place as Nicolas Cage, right? Because he's like an aging action star to a certain extent, right? Mm-hmm. He's the one who can't really see the spotlight, because like if Tom Cruise is in your movie, he has to be the star, even though this isn't really a Tom Cruise movie. This is supposed to be a Cameron Diaz movie. He's trying to figure out what's next. And instead of going the Keanu route and going like smaller, interesting, weirdo kind of roles, he needs to be that lead. And I feel like it's still working, but I think everything that Walter's saying, it's like, well, how do we do this just when he is 57 years. It's just like it doesn't quite connect. It's a strange place to be.
It's interesting because unlike Cage and, you know, for a while Keanu had like Matrix to fall back on, right?
Yeah.
Like he knew they were going to do two more at least and they're coming back. But like, you know, Cage never really had a franchise. He's not a franchise guy. Like what's interesting about Cruise is that he
National Treasure. He wants to be a
I know, we hope. Fingers are crossed. But like what's interesting about Cruise is he knows he's got Mission Impossible in his back pocket, right? And he knows like he owns that. So like he can go off and take chances kind of. Like he can make Night and Day as like a one off, right? And he'll go and make like Oblivion and it's like there's not gonna, you know, that's a one, you know, like I don't feel like he's trying to start more franchises, but he is trying to sort of like branch out in that action genre. So it's like, okay, an action comedy, an action sci-fi, an action, you know what I'm saying? Like he's sort of branching out in the genre a little more, I think.
I want to push back on that a little bit, because if you look at all of his non-Mission Impossible work after 2010, which is Night and Day, you have, let's set aside Rock of Ages, you have Jack Reacher, which is unambiguously a play for a franchise.
Mm-hmm.
You have Edge of Tomorrow, which is unambiguously a play for a franchise. You have The Mummy, which is unambiguously a play for a franchise. I think he's trying to get a second thing that he can ride off into the sunset in, you know? And I think that you're right in the sense that he's trying to make new stuff. But I think that, like, Night and Day, this strikes me as the kind of thing where it can evolve into a Mr. and Mrs. Smith thing. Capers and spy movies have always worked. If it had hit, I bet that you would have had a second and a third and a fourth and so on and so forth.
Yeah, that Dark Universe thing I totally forgot about, like wiped that from my mind intentionally. Like Jack Reacher, I see, but that just is such more of a subdued sort of thing. It's really almost feels like CSI on the big screen and kind of thing. But it is very franchisey. And I don't think Edge of Tomorrow was conceived that way, but it's definitely, thank goodness, they're making another one of those. So it is cool.
What is kind of weird about where he's winding up is that I sort of see it as like a hybrid of your two points of view. It's that, like, I don't know that these are necessarily, like, some of them explicitly are being franchisey, like the Dark Universe, but I think some of them are just like, what could be a movie that we tell in one or two? Because it feels like, and whether it's just because he's getting too old or they're not a hit as big as they should be, or just it just takes a while, but it feels like instead of doing franchises, he's doing like movie plus sequel, right? Like he's doing a second Edge of Tomorrow, he's doing second Top Gun, he's did two Jack Reachers, right? It just feels like whether the sequel doesn't do as much or it takes time to get there or whatever, like maybe he is going for that, but it seems he's in an interesting kind of rhythm or cadence where it's like one-off movie gets a sequel and then stops. Now he's too old for Jack Reacher and they're going to replace him, we're going to do a TV series or whatever they're doing, they're going to reboot it without him. It just feels strange that he is still a movie star, still an action star, and you know, we still have a decade to go. We're closing in. We're still way ahead of where we are with Tom Hanks.
This is the first film that he released during the Obama administration.
Okay, that's interesting. That's interesting because, yeah, he didn't do any in 2009. We're 11 years ahead of Hanks now. So, like, we're flying through. We're getting modern, but it feels like it's not the beginning of the end, but this is definitely a different era. You know, Mike, we've been talking for, like, 5 or 6 episodes about, like, this sort of weird stretch that we're in, but maybe we're still in a weird stretch because, like, outside of Edge of Tomorrow, has there been 2 out of the last like 15 movies have been like a really big, fun, exciting new thing? It just seems like a lot of them are like introspective or kind of not as big as they could or should be.
Well, I mean, they're certainly not like dramatic showcases. You know what I'm saying? Like he's not going to sit behind a desk for 45 minutes and talk to Meryl Streep, or he's not going to, you know, go cross country with his brother. You know what I'm saying? Like he's firmly in a mode. Mm-hmm. It's just like, I can't, you know, it just keeps shifting around in weird ways that like I can't quite track, but he seems to be like content where he is because it doesn't seem like he has like that dramatic shit to fall back on anymore because he hasn't been doing it, you know? And whereas like, you know, well, Cage has cornered the VOD market, but like, you know, I feel like Hanks, you know, like Hanks is always kind of going to be secure because he's always going to be a great dramatic actor and he never really had to delve into action too much. Or it'll be interesting to see when his body quits on him, like what actually happens to his career.
We're sort of in the era of Cruise Club where like it's more interesting from an analytical perspective than ever before, but it's also less interesting from an actual visual standpoint than ever before. But I mean, we still have some of my favorite Tom Cruise movies to come, including maybe the 3 best Mission Impossible movies and Edge of Tomorrow, and like there's still great stuff to come, but we are definitely, it's a new era of Cruise Club, and you know, as we approach the end here, it's getting interesting. All right, Jess, on the flip side of this, on this movie you love, is there anything about this that you don't love?
I mean, I'm kind of with you. You know, you said it earlier, you know, not to be like feminist, but Cameron Diaz kind of, she is super ditzy and she's like kind of dumb. And honestly, I'm pretty sure I would notice if someone was putting shit into my carry-on. If I'm on a plane and everyone's kind of passed out, I'm not just going to be like, oh, this is fun. You know, that part of it irritates me, and it'll always irritate me, but it doesn't take away from the fact that I still love the movie for what it is of just being, it's just this playful, I feel like Tom Cruise is just, he's in this movie to have fun, to take a break from what he's doing and like doing all the action stuff. I don't think he was doing it to make it like a great movie. Mm-hmm. I think it's just kind of like, I don't know, I feel like if I was an action actor, I would want to kind of take a break and take a step back to do something kind of fun and lighthearted just for a little bit before I jump back into, okay, I'm going to go get my ass beat for real in a more serious movie.
And I do wonder, because we have now Cameron Diaz returning from Vanilla Sky. Like, I wonder if they hit it off on that movie, because she's not the lead of Vanilla Sky. She's only in maybe a third of the movie. But I wonder if they just had some kind of, you know, on-screen, off-screen chemistry or whatever, and just like, hey, like, let's do this together again. I'm not sure. I also, he was not, I don't know if he was the first choice, because it seems like as he dropped out of The Tourist, at one point Chris Tucker was attached to be the lead, and Ava Mendes was going to be the Cameron Diaz role, which is a wildly different movie than the one we got, I think. And also consider for the lead role here, Adam Sandler and Gerard Butler, which are also wildly different movies.
Oh, that could have been good. I was thinking a same-sex kind of situation, or I was
thinking I don't know. I don't think together. I think that each in the cruise role. I don't know if this was ever,
I could see Adam Sandler being sort of like dumbstruck by Gerard Butler. Like, that would be kind of good. But, or like, you could even do like Angelina Jolie and like me or whoever, right? Like, I'm just saying in general, like, you could play with the gender of this too, and like I feel like that's what I was thinking too, because I was like, man, like if I was on a plane and this was going down and like Angelina Jolie was like acting like Tom Cruise was and all this, I'd be just this sort of like flighty and ditzy and stupid probably.
Sure. Quick sidebar, in terms of critical reception, this movie has a 52% on Rotten Tomatoes, 49% audience score, 46 on Metacritic. I think it kind of budget of $117 million, domestic made $76 million, worldwide made $261 million. So it was not a huge hit.
Oh, it was a flop. It made like $4 million in its first weekend. It was like bad.
Yeah, right? it worldwide made up for it, but I guess that's just because Tom Cruise is an action star worldwide, but still, like, it was not the hit that they wanted it to be. So it's mixed at best, I think, the tepid reaction. And I think that this is a movie that is overall just kind of fun and forgettable. But Walter, what about you? What about this? You know, I know that we sort of, you've made points before that you think that it'd be better suited without Tom Cruise, with maybe more of a Henry Cavill, but is there a specific part or moment in here that you don't like, something that you think doesn't work especially well?
The big question that I had over the course of the movie was, who is the movie for? Mm-hmm. And when I was watching Cameron Diaz, who, like, I will go out and say, like, I think she's objectively funny. She's a very funny actress. I think that she is good at comedy. And I do not think that Tom Cruise is as adept at comedy. I think that he's good at performing, but I don't always think that he's like, he really has that sense of timing. One thing that I really like enjoyed about this movie was I was trying to see who this movie was for. I think that there's a world in which that the original conception of this movie was, oh, we're going to invert the Bond formula and we want this to be for, you know, like a four quadrant, even like a younger kind of crowd.
Right.
But then I think that with the casting, especially with Cameron Diaz, especially with Tom Cruise, it was like, actually, maybe this is a comedy for adults who, you know the tropes that we're going through here, who know Cameron Diaz, and who maybe it's like, oh, we want to target especially women for an action movie kind of in that direction. And then like, it's just too heavy on Cruise, and they just, I kind of lose track of who it's for. And I think that the moment that I really lost track of who it was for, like, I think after the third time that Cameron Diaz was drugged, I think that I was like, wait a minute, I'm not entirely sure where this movie's going. I think that they've kind of relied on this one crutch too many times. And I don't really remember James Bond drugging that many women, so I don't really think that it works as well as they think it does as far as kind of gluing the movie together. The reliance on that was kind of the thing that took me the most out of it, because I think it really undermined my notion of who the movie was for.
Yeah, and there's the thing later that they make a joke about, but when she wakes up in her apartment or in her house in Boston and she's in different clothes and she's got the sticky notes everywhere and she's had breakfast made for her, like, it's supposed to be this, like, romantic, like, look at him, he's doing everything for her. But even then, I'm just like, wait, she's wearing different clothes. How'd that happen? And then she wakes up on the beach in the bikini and then she makes the thing and he's like, you know, I've been trained to do this with a paperclip and a junior mint. Like, I can change in clothes without looking or whatever. And it's like, that's still like, they're addressing it, but it's still like, oh, yeah, that's kind of icky. And then later, I guess they play it off by saying that he wakes up later with different clothes or whatever. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, you know, I can do the same thing too. But it still is like, no, that's different. And I feel like because we're seeing the movie, or we're supposed to be seeing the movie, I think, from her perspective, the constant drugging of it is attempted to be like what you're saying, Walter, like a running gag, but it goes to the well too much. I like when they mix it up and like he makes her pass out by the pressure point or whatever. Like, I think that's kind of funny-ish. The constant in new clothing and just the overall lack of agency, it's like, oh, this is strange, especially since like it's supposed to be her movie. And it quickly becomes not her movie.
It starts out as like a funny once-off, like, oh, she's in over her head in the spy game kind of, you know, like, and he's not even thinking twice about it. And then like the second time it's like, huh, well, that's funny. Like, okay. And then the third time I'm like, all right, this is just like a crutch, you know, like this is, we need to get from A to B and I don't know how to get her there. So like, I'm just going to like have her pass out and wake up and stuff. But I mean, it would have been funnier. Yeah. Like if it was a different, like, you know, one time she got like, I'm not saying it's much better, but like if she had gotten like knocked on the head by something and knocked on, you know, if they were all different things and not just constantly being drugged and stuff, even that would have been a little bit better. But like too many times for sure to like, you know, even be funny, like it kind of go overboard.
It's moments like that where the 12 writers really show, like this movie went through rewrites and rewrites and rewrites and rewrites. The Pamplona, like, or the, I should say, the Running of the Bulls sequence is really, really good.
Yeah.
All of the set pieces are really, really good. Even some of the conceits are really, really good. I love the parent stuff. I know that some of y'all don't, but like, I think that was really good of just like, you know, finding out that James Bond's name isn't James Bond. It's like Steve Blankenship. And like, I just think it's like a clever thing, but it just, there's no cohesion in it and there's no connective tissue. And I think that that's kind of a symptom of its fairly troubled production process.
It's funny. You can almost like feel the last writer come in and put that final drug joke in the end as a reversal, you know, like now that you say it, like that's how that almost feels.
What about this doesn't work for you? Is there something here that you would swap out or change or alter or remove?
Well, definitely the most surprising part was seeing Gal Gadot show up. Like, yeah. I think that was great. And like to not have her stick around for the rest of the movie is a cinema sin if I've ever seen one. That's bad. Definitely like the one thing, like I could sort of take everything except for how loose the motivation of the villains were. And like even Stellar Skateboard, like the guy is such a twerp. Like, I don't know. I just felt like he didn't have the authority to be chasing down Cruise at all. Like he didn't show any skills or anything like that. You know, the other guy, Antonio, like I just feel like there should have been way more people after them too, you know, and like for what he has in his pocket. But also I was thinking along the way too, like Cameron Diaz's character, like it, maybe a fix that could have gone on here, it could have been sort of like a, you know, stick with me, like sort of like an inner space kind of thing where like maybe he's like hiding something on her, sort of maybe in like a Hobbs and Shaw way, Joey, where like there's something about her that's vital. It's not the battery, but literally Cameron Diaz needs to be sort of like this escort mission so that she, you know, they're after her instead of the battery kind of thing. Like that could have fixed a lot too.
Yeah, because what's the purpose of her tagging along? That's just because she's kind of pot committed, but like it feels like at any point she could just leave.
Yeah, and she does once or twice, and then like Tom Cruise drags her back into everything again.
But to what end? Like, but why?
I'm not quite sure. That's, you know, yeah. So that's another thing is like even his motivations are unclear, and like maybe they can just write that off as like, oh, he's being spy-ish and like playing it close to the vest, and like, you know, you're never gonna know like all what he's thinking and everything. So some of that stuff did get to me a little bit, but then I forgot all about it after like the awesome action set pieces.
You know, I do wonder if like with regards to the Stellar Skateboard being a twerp and such, like I wonder if they had played up, because I feel like, again, it sort of straddles the middle ground where they try to make his character and the Viola Davis character, Viola Davis in this movie for some reason, try to make them both like real characters, but I feel like if they had leaned more on like cliches more than they did, and just like going back to what we were saying before, like if it's an inversion of the Bond girl or like they she finds herself in a Bond movie or whatever, like, if you're able to, like, be more generic and more archetypal on purpose and have them be less as people and more just as, like, CIA director, like, not even give her a name or something. Her name is, like, director. You know, like, I feel like there's yeah. something to do there to make them more vague and, like, just generic, because, like, as they are, you're like, of course he's going to go bad, because, like, why wouldn't he go bad? But the movie's trying to telegraph it so that there's a chance that he isn't bad, but, like, he's always going to go bad. It's trying to tell, like, an authentic story, but also the predictable story, and then kind of winds up sort of satisfying neither.
It was great to see Amanda Waller show up, though. I was like, man, she is she's a badass in everything.
Truly, truly a Suicide Squad up in here.
God damn it.
Yeah, like, it should have had her. Like, I wanted to see her out in the field, like, tracking him down. You know what I'm saying? Like, as opposed to skateboard. That's what I'm talking about. Like, they sort of, like, backseat. She took the backseat too much.
Like, well, I think that, like, in the Bond movies, M doesn't go, like, you know, that it's the exception, not the rule, that M.
Once in a while.
She did, and then she died in Skyfall. Like, this happened. Like,
oh, yeah, true.
But again, like, I'm very much viewing this through the prism of Bond, because I think that this is very much a reaction to it. And again, it went in a different direction. I think that that you can't get rid of the cruise component of it. I don't know. I think it was, I have been saying negative things about it, or at least critiquing it to an extent, but, like, at the end of the day, like, I really did actually, I enjoyed the hour and 49 minutes that I spent with it. I'm more with Jessica than I am, like, necessarily letting on. I think that this movie has a lot of good heart in it. And I think that, like, my favorite part was, like, the parents and that kind of thing, of showing those relationships and that arc too. So I think that there's a lot of good in this one.
Yeah, I don't think that anybody could really point to this as a bad movie. I think that at the worst, it's forgettable. Like, I think that there's nothing about this. Like, it is charming. It is fun. There is good action. The leads are both likable. I think it's a little bit messy, but I don't think that this is a bad movie. Like, I think that you could do a lot worse. And even though I have this toward the bottom of my cruise rankings, Mike, again, it's just sort of like a function of, like, it's just the hand that we've been dealt with, like, so many good movies. Like, we know that there's some clunkers coming, but, like, there's very few bad movies that if you're like, I don't think that anybody would ever say, and maybe Jess, if you would let me know, I don't think anybody would say, like, give me a Tom Cruise movie to watch. You'd be like, oh, Night and Day. But I don't think that this is, like, we got rid of worst movie in the awards for a reason, because, like, this is not a bad movie. Like, this would be one of his worst movies, but, like, it shouldn't be in the running for that kind of award, because it's not a bad movie.
Yeah, I think we all know that I would safely say that this is not the Tom Cruise movie I would recommend.
No, Tom Cruise has a little bit longer hair and has a more elfish and druid like, or I don't even know. What's that movie about?
He's not wearing pants.
He's not wearing pants.
It's about how Tom Cruise saves the unicorn, the last unicorn, and turns the princess back from her shadow self and defeats the demon.
Getting a headache just listening to this description again.
Awesome.
Thank you, Mike.
Sorry, what?
Appreciate that.
What's happening?
Any other thoughts about Night and Day? I do want to point out that Tom Cruise eats ice cream twice in this movie, and he wears two different pairs of sunglasses, and he runs at least twice. A guy does hang off a link of sausages out a moving train window, which I thought was a nice touch. But any other thoughts about this before we play a couple games and nominate this for some awards?
I think it's interesting as a James Mangold movie. I think that he's an interesting director. And I think that it kind of comes, everything after it that he's made has been pretty solid gold.
Yeah, solid Mangold?
Yeah, solid Mangold, exactly. Jeez. Oh god, if you do one more pun, I swear to Christ, I'm never
I mean, you're just setting me up though. You're setting me up. So I mean, he had done Logan, he had done Ford v Ferrari, he did Wolverine, I think, was after this, right? So I mean, he's done solid stuff after this.
3:10 to Yuma is before, Walk the Line is before.
I think Girl Interrupted.
Like,
oh, huh.
Yeah. He's a very competent guy, and I would say that, again, like, for its many flaws, I do not think that any of those whatsoever are in the direction. I think that it's a really good looking movie. It's very watchable. The action sequences are great. Action sequences tend to be much more like choreography rather than, like, it's real good. I think that there's, like, an MVP of the movie. I think it is, to an extent, him, because it's just, like, really, he did, I think, the very best that he was able to do. And I think that, like, everything that is compelling and visually interesting about this movie, of which there's a lot, is I think, in his from him, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's a really great action director. I'm not so sure about, like, you know, how emotional he can get. Like, you know, I wasn't really feeling it so much during Cameron Diaz's little montage where, like, we sort of see her back to her day-to-day life kind of thing. And sorry, Walt, but like the parent stuff, I know that was supposed to sort of like tug a little bit more at the heartstrings and things, but I just was like, oh, I'm just not like getting it. I'm just not there with that stuff. But like the rest of the stuff, like I think he's like exceptional. The only other thing I wanted to mention was Paul Dano, because I don't think we mentioned him at all. And for quite a like small sort of like throwaway role where you could really just cast anyone, like I feel like casting him sort of just like added a lot. And like that's what Mangold I think did, is like he took a script that is very sketchy and he made it work, you know, well enough.
Yeah. I'll come to the defense of the parent scene, because I think that that's the scene where she realizes that there's actually something to this guy, that it wasn't all lies. That when he joked like, I was Boy Scout, actually Eagle Scout, like that when she makes the connection of like, no, he like has made sacrifices. He does have people that he's looking out for, even if he's not allowed to, like, and that he's not entirely full of shit, I think that was kind of a critical moment. Like that's where she, I think, has her most agency, because she is going there with expecting the worst. And then there's some like genuine, like, oh, there's a heart in this cold-blooded killer he has told me about that I did not trust him on. And that kind of propels the rest of the movie forward.
I like that. I like that description. Jess, any other thoughts about Night and Day that we have not covered yet that you want to get off your chest before we play some games?
No, I just feel like it's one of those movies where you grab an alcoholic beverage or several and some snacks and you play a drinking game while you're watching it, and it just gets exponentially more fun.
Are you describing your weekend? Did you guys play a drinking game when you watch this on Friday?
I didn't, but I drank an entire bottle of wine while I watched this movie, and it was great.
There you go. That's, you know, just every time Tom Cruise is on screen, take a sip.
I'm going to rewatch this movie, and I'm not just going to rewatch it once. I'm going to rewatch it about 4 or 5 times, because every goddamn time I watch this movie, a presidential candidate drops out of the race.
You know, yeah, you could make Super Tuesday very simple if you watch this 4 or 5 times tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would love that.
First up, first question. We've played this on every other Tom episode before. We obviously have the other podcast, the Tom Hanks podcast, Hanks for the Memories. If Tom Hanks were cast in the role of Roy Miller, a.k.a. Roy Knight, a.k.a. whatever his first name is, Knight, do you think this works? Would Tom Hanks be able to play this role? Or if not, where would he play? Could he play, I guess, the stellar skateboard role? But what do you guys think? Could he play the Tom Cruise role in this movie?
What I realized watching this movie is he made this movie. It's The Man with One Red Shoe. He's the Cameron Diaz character.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And
I didn't like that movie either.
No, that movie's terrible. But I think I'm with Walt too. Like, I think, you know, if anything, maybe Stellan Skarsgård, maybe the Paul Dano, you know, I think a peripheral role, but I don't ever see him jumping out of an airplane anytime soon on camera.
I think he could also play the Viola Davis role if we want to. I mean, not that we want to take another role away from a woman, but he could also play that sort of distinguished CIA director role. Jess, what about you? Do you think, where do you think Tom Hanks fits in this movie? Does he fit in this movie somewhere?
Hold on. I have to say something. It's Peter Sarsgaard.
What are we? Oh, we've been saying Steven? No. What's his name?
Stellan. Saying Stellan Skarsgård the whole time.
It's the same. It's the skateboard. So it's perfect skateboard. Fine. It's fine. I can't tell them apart, although I know Bill is it. Pennywise.
Not even the same family.
Are they all
family.
Related? They're not all related.
It's not even this the same one, family.
Yeah.
Oh,
this
boy.
Guy is married. Peter Sarsgaard is married
to Ben
Gyllenhaal.
This one's married to a Gyllenhaal. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Okay. No, I don't think Tom Hanks could do this. It doesn't work for me.
Do you think Stellan Skarsgård could do this?
I think that his son, not Bill, the super tall one.
Wait, there's
guy,
a taller one than Bill?
Eric
the
from
one
True
in.
Blood.
What's
his name?
Yeah, he was in Bombshell, Joey.
Oh,
as the Canadian guy.
He could do it.
Okay. Follow up question. Now that we know that Tom Hanks probably could not play this role, we found someone on Twitter named Harperfect who said that you could change, and again, I think if Ethan Hunt can do it, he can do it here too, we could change Tom Cruise's character name in any movie to the name Lightning McQueen and not a thing would change. Do you think Night and Day still works with either the McQueen family in Boston, hell yeah, absolutely Irish name for sure, or as Special Agent Lightning McQueen?
Sure.
I mean, I think it makes the movie better. This time, that's an additive, yeah.
I think that's a little bit too much mustard on this particular hot dog, but honestly, I think that it wouldn't necessarily change the content too much. Again, I don't think that Tom Hanks could do it. I think that literally if everybody except Cameron Diaz was British in this movie, it would be an excellent movie.
Okay.
Because I think that you need, like, if you're going to go Bond, then I think that you need to triple that. Like, you have a stupid MacGuffin. You have, like, a techie guy who's not Q enough. You have a CIA director who's not M enough. You have a secret agent who's not Bond enough. Like, there's all of the raw material there, but I think that they err by making it American, because I think that that takes it away from that which they're actually truly pastiching.
Not Bond enough is a great name for something, like a band or something, but not Bond enough. I like that a lot. Also, Bill's brother is Alexander, and according to Google, they are both 6'4", so both freakishly tall.
Pennywise does not look that tall in real life. Okay.
Oh, no, he is. He's big. Isn't he in? He was in some. He's in Assassination Nation, I think, as well. So, okay. Answer to the question, does Tom Cruise run this? Absolutely.
Oh, my gosh. Like, I thought, Joey, because I'm also watching, like, Ghost Protocol. Like, I watched these right after the other. And I was like, can it get better than Tom Cruise running on a roof in his sunglasses? And then in Ghost Protocol, he does, like, a
sandstorm.
Not only that, but before that, he's running on the side of a building. I was like, all right. Like, he just keeps stopping himself.
Yeah. Let's nominate this for some awards, thinking maybe... maybe the Golden Missions. I still don't know if either of you have any thoughts on like what we can name the awards. Because for the Tom Hanks podcast, we have the Woodies. We have obviously the Slam Dunk, just the Woody Awards. We don't know what to name the Tom Cruise Awards. We're running out of runway. Like we have almost watched all of his movies. I don't know what to name. We don't know what to name these awards. Any thoughts on what we should name the Tom Cruise Awards?
Yeah.
I think they're going to be the sunglasses at the end of the day, but we never know.
It's interesting with Tom Cruise is that he's very hard to pick out a thing about him that is unique, because the whole kind of package is the deal. The Sprinties?
Ooh, that's not bad.
I do like where you're headed. I do like where you're headed, Walt. I think that's...
Because you don't want to call them, like, the Runs.
No, you keep suggesting that on every one of these that we do, and it's never going to happen.
It's a good joke.
Stop trying to make that happen. Best film, I'm going to say no. Best of the worst, most fun, bad film? We have Cocktail and Endless Love. I feel like this is in that category.
Oh, no.
You don't think so?
I don't take it like that, because I genuinely like this movie the way it is. But like, but I feel it's, like I said earlier, I feel that it's self-aware, right? Like I think it knows that it's like, hey, we're not Mission Impossible. We're definitely more Hot Shots or something like that going on here. Where
I don't know if Tom Cruise knows that in the movie.
You don't think so? I don't know, because I feel like he's playing up the fact that he's like a people melt, like, just at the sight of me kind of thing, or like I'm such a movie star kind of quality. I feel like he's playing that quality up more than usual in this, but that's just me, so I don't know.
And I will take that back, because I do love Endless Love and the insanity of that with Billy the Arsonist.
Jesus,
man, oh man, I might have to buy that movie. That they put out, like, Shout Factory put that out on like some like fancy Blu-ray since we did it, so
like the month after we had to track it down.
Best or worst Cruise role? I'm going to say no, because I feel like he could either, like, it's kind of just a generic version of what he's doing, as opposed to like an intentionally generic version, right? Like it could be more meta, and it's not.
Or it could be more well-formed, like for what it is, like Jack Reacher, right? Like at least he feels like a complete character, like a different guy kind of thing. Yeah.
Most badass role? I'm going to say no. Most daring role to take? I'm going to say no. I mean, I just feel like if you compare this to Ethan Hunt, he's not going to be Ethan Hunt.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, he's going to give him a run for his money.
Mike, what did this movie do to you? Like, did this movie, like, does this have, like, secrets on you?
He landed an airplane. He ran with the bulls. Like, he fought.
You know who else landed an airplane? Is Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks landed an airplane on the Hudson, no less.
That's
you can't
true.
Say okay, that, so that's nothing.
A lot more souls on that plane than this one, Mike.
I'll take the plane off the list. I don't know. I just really got a kick out of him in this movie. So, I mean, you know, we don't have to nominate it. I'm not going to not gush about it,
though. I'm not going to fight you on it, but I'm also not going to nominate it. So take that for what it is.
Fair enough.
Best fight. Is there a particular fight? I will say the airplane fight here. We can put that on here.
Airplane fight's real good. That's a real
airplane
good
fight. Best theme song, soundtrack, score. I don't remember.
No,
right? Best vehicle chase, motorcycle chase, running with the bulls.
Oh, the motorcycle.
There's also the tunnel chase, like when she's driving and he's saying, open the door.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
So I think that this is a very chasey movie. If there's the thing that this movie excels at, it is the chase. Like, it is the action set pieces in this movie are bar none for any of its other flaws. It's like, it really gets a good chase in.
Yeah. Best dance scene? Don't think he dances, does he?
I don't recall. So.
Best outfit, wardrobe. I mean, he has a good looking suit at one point, but I don't think there's anything in here that really stands out, or does it?
No, it's not like he's wearing like a neon or any color.
Now, here's a tough one, Mike. Best sunglasses. I know you pointed it out, but like, ooh, it feels like they're kind of what we've already seen before. Like, it's not like I want the sunglasses from Night and Day. Like, I went out and bought knockoff Top Gun sunglasses because I wanted the green lens and the gold frames. This movie is not one I'm like, I need those sunglasses, even though,
right,
you know, the aviators that he wears while he's on the hood of her car do look great.
It's tough, right? Because like a lot of sunglasses look alike. Mm-hmm. And so like I can only really picture like the ones you mentioned and then maybe the ones from Mission Impossible 2 because they explode.
Yeah.
You know, like they contain his mission and like they're really weird looking when he puts them on and stuff. So yeah, they just, you know, I didn't really notice. It just seemed like he put on...
Well,
like,
also the Risky Business sunglasses. Did you forget Risky Business sunglasses?
Yeah, I mean, but that's what I mean. Like, these even felt more like that. Like, I was sort of like, are those Ray-Bans? Are they Oakleys? That doesn't matter. Like,
all right, I'll put them on there. That's fine. I got to give you one of these. Best death. So here's a question. Do we want to nominate best death? Because his character died, but not really. Like, not on screen.
It's one of those patented dead, not dead moments for Tom Cruise's character. Right, Joe? I mean, that's a category all on its own. We should have been tracking if we had only known about that.
Well, we have that. I mean, we have them all written down.
Okay, good. Then we're going to have to go through that's them. And journal.
We have twice an Interview with the Vampire. We have kind of in this movie. We have Vanilla Sky, quote unquote, commits suicide. He's defibrillated and brought back to life in Mission Impossible 3. In Mission Impossible 2, Tom Cruise dies, but he's in the mask.
A lookalike.
He's rolled over by a horse and then revived from the afterlife in Far and Away. And then he takes a leap of faith in Vanilla Sky. So there's like six movies and 8 or 9 times where he dies and doesn't actually die.
It's awesome.
Right?
I mean, that's like completely unique to him as an actor. It's got to be, right? Like, that's all. It's so. Like, okay, I'll die in this movie as long as I'm not really dead.
Best line or best freakout? Is there a particular memorable quote from this? I had to dig for a quote in here that I liked that I was going to use as the pull quote. I don't know that there is one here because it feels like he's supposed to be kind of like just, in a way, sort of generic action star without really any kind of like memorable badass line.
I don't know. I really do like when he says, just stay in the booth.
Yeah. And then you should have stayed in the booth.
All right. I'll put that on here.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like Cameron Diaz is given all the freakouts and stuff like that. So like, he's like, that's the thing that really struck me about him in this movie is like, he is so casual and calm and cool and collected in the most sort of anxiety driven, panic stricken moments that you should be in, you know, like high speed chase. Oh, it's cool. No problem. Like, got to land an airplane. Just give me a minute. Like, no problem. Yeah.
Best sex scene. They do not have sex, even though at one point Cameron Diaz is like, I really want to have sex right now because that's a thing. Is there anything that he does athletically in this that is, I will point out that he and Cameron Diaz are doing most of their stunts. A lot of the driving here, they are doing. A lot of the wire work and everything they're doing. Is there anything in here that we want to nominate the best of the best of his stunts through his career?
He jumps and falls onto that big thing of like pallets and then apologizes to the guy on the boat. That looks like it killed a stuntman. Like, it looked like it hurt. Like,
all right, I'll say jumping onto a boat.
He smashes into just a big pile of crap on that. And I like, again, it's stunts, so you know that they take care of it, but like it was a real good looking stunt.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were two other moments. Like there was one when he was jumping, building the rooftop to rooftop, and it was like almost a prelude to the Mission Impossible fallout because like it looked like he almost missed the ledge and then like yanked himself up, and it was kind of a really cool camera angle too when they did that, and I was like, oh, that's real, that's definitely and then when he sort of fakes his own death and he falls, that's like a really big, like, I know that's more of like a classic stunt and stuff, but like, that's a really big drop into water and stuff, and I'm sure he did that one too. So like, yeah, there's a lot of really great stunt stuff happening.
On the same coin, is there a scene that we want to nominate for best running scene?
I mean, dude, running on the roof like that was just hilarious. I mean, that's my phone right there.
All right,
but I mean, still, is it gonna beat running from a
sandstorm? But we can always cull it down. We can cull it down later.
And then I'm watching that going, he runs from another sandstorm in the Dark Universe. Like, it's crazy.
Now, here's an interesting one. Best or worst love story? I don't think it's best. Is this worst love story? Is this up there, Mike, with Bill and Alice in Eyes Wide Shut or Brian and Jordan in Cocktail?
Oh, it's no Brian and Jordan. No, like, that is, they're doomed.
And you don't think that these two are doomed?
I would say that it's worst. He's always drugging her.
Yeah.
Well, she's always getting drugged. Like, I think
Whoa, hold on.
No, because the bad guys did it also. No, I didn't mean it like that. I'm just saying, like, the bad guys drugged her, too. It's not all Tom Cruise. Like, it's just, she's accident prone, maybe in that manner. I'm sure it'll stop when now that the mission's over. Or do you think they're going to wake up every day and like whoever drugs each other first, like they have, it's like playing a game?
Yeah,
like,
maybe.
I don't think so.
I'm going to nominate them for worst love story though. Best ensemble cast, I'm going to say no, but then best non-cruise actor female, I will say Cameron Diaz.
With a bullet, yes, absolutely.
In both Vanilla Sky and Night and Day. So now we have here 9 awards, Jesus Christ. Best fight, best vehicle chase race, best sunglasses, best death, quote unquote death, best line, most athletic feat, best running scene, worst love story, and best non-cruise actor female.
Yeah.
It always feels like these like middle of the road, kind of like not great, not bad movies wind up with like a ton of awards, and I don't know why the science there works, but it always seems to happen that way.
It's science.
Weird science. Well, Walter and Jess, thank you both so much for joining us. Walter, if there's anything you want to plug, specifically the newsletter that I just got my monthly statement for, the best $5 I spend all month, if you want to tell people about Numlock News, go for it.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, thanks for having me on. This is always a ton of fun. I write a newsletter. It is free for the weekday edition. The $5 a month that you're referring to gets you a little extra on Sunday. But it's called Numlock. It's about great numbers that are buried in news stories. It's nice and fun. It's a good way to wake up. You can find that at numlock.news, like the key on the keyboard. Other than that, I mean, so I'm also doing a bunch of stuff at Insider for elections. That'll be fun over the next couple months. So if you're looking for an election night resource, check me out. I'm on Twitter at Walt Hickey. Thanks again for having me on. This is always a huge, like, a really, really good excuse to watch a fun movie and talk about it with some cool folks. So thanks for having me on. And those who are listening, be sure to like it and give a good review to these guys.
Oh, well, thank you. Montez, what about you? What do you want to plug? I know you got your unicorn musings. Are you still musing over there about unicorns and such?
No, man. My life is just so busy right now.
Oh, you do have a baby.
I know. And like,
you want to plug being a mom?
No, I don't.
Okay.
My dude's upstairs crying right now. So
oh, no.
He should be asleep, but no, I'm still watching movies, still keeping track of them, still reading a shitload of books. So I'll get back to it eventually. I've got my list going to rate my things. If anybody wants to go out there and see anything I've written in the past, again, I only watch movies that I find it to be entertaining, and I let people know if I find those movies entertaining. A lot of people don't agree. Joey and I don't agree on a lot of things. So
your reviews on both sides of the spectrum, movies that you love and movies you hate, I'm just like, I can't even. What do you, what? All right.
And you know, honestly, sometimes it's just the mood I'm in. Like sometimes I really love a movie or I'll go back and watch it later. And I'm like, man, I really hate this movie. Why did I love it to begin with? And I agree with you. Night and Day, while it's a really fun movie and I really like it and I enjoy it, I completely forgot about this movie until I randomly saw it on HBO 4 months ago. And I was like, holy crap, I forgot. I really love this movie.
It's like finding an old friend. It's just like, oh,
exactly.
Yes. Hello, Night and Day. We meet again.
Yes, yes.
Well, Mike, next week over on the Hanks from the Memories podcast, you and I are getting marooned on an island. We were on an island in this movie. We're getting marooned on an island, but instead of Cameron Diaz by our side, we just have a volleyball with a bloody handprint. Yeah. You're talking about Castaway.
Wilson.
Wildly different content from this one. But yeah, and then in 2 weeks, we're back here. We've teased it a little bit. Back here with Ghost Protocol, the next Mission Impossible movie, what a good movie. But, you know, Fridays are for fun. Also, check out High School Slumber Party, which Walter's been on a couple times.
Yes, that's such a good one. He emailed me about coming back on, I think. It's just life's been a nightmare. But that is such a good podcast that folks should listen to if they're not already subscribed.
Well, every Friday, yes, go check out High School Slumber Party. Walter was on the Christine episode. He was on a couple different ones. Go check out High School Slumber Party. Go check out all 26 shows at cageclub.me or find whatever you need at facebook.com/cageclub or at cageclubpod on Twitter and Instagram. Email us run at cageclub.me. Come back next week on the Hanks of the Memories feed for Castaway, and then come back here in 2 weeks for Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And that was Walter Hickey and Jess Collins, formerly Jess Night and Day. And we'll see you next time right here on Cruise Club.
No matter, darling.